In the Heart of the Sea, The Tragedy of the Whale Ship Essex, by Nathaniel Philbrick. Read by Scott Brick. After listening to the first mate's account of the sinking, Pollard attempted to take command of the dire situation. Their first priority, he announced, was to get as much food and water out of the wreck as possible. To do that, they needed to cut away the masts, so that the still partially floating hull could right. The men climbed onto the ship and began to hack away at the spars and rigging with hatchets from the whaleboats. As noon approached, Captain Pollard shoved off in his boat to take an observation with his quadrant. They were at latitude 0 degrees 40 minutes south, longitude 119 degrees 0 minutes west, just about as far from land as it was possible to be anywhere on Earth. 45 minutes later, the masts had been reduced to 20-foot stumps, and the Essex was floating partly upright again, at a 45-degree angle. Although most of the provisions were unreachable in the lower hold, there were two large casks of bread between decks in the waist of the ship. And since the casks were on the Essex's upper side, the men could hope that they were still dry. Through the holes they chopped into the deck, they were able to extract 600 pounds of hardtack. Elsewhere, they broke through the planks to find casks of fresh water, more, in fact, than they could safely hold in their whaleboats. They also scavenged tools and equipment, including 2 pounds of boat nails, a musket, 2 pistols, and a small canister of powder. Several Galapagos tortoises swam to the whaleboats from the wreck, as did 2 skinny hogs. Then it began to blow. In need of shelter from the mounting wind and waves, yet fearful the Essex might at any moment break up and sink like a stone, Pollard ordered that they tie up to the ship but leave at least 100 yards of line between it and themselves. Like a string of ducklings trailing their mother, they spent the night in the lee of the ship. The ship shuddered with each wave. Chase lay sleepless in his boat, staring at the wreck and reliving the catastrophe over and over again in his mind. Some of the men slept, and others wasted the night in unavailing murmurs, Chase wrote. Once, he admitted, he found himself breaking into tears. Part of him was guilt-racked, knowing that if he had only hurled the lance, it might have all turned out differently. When it came time to write his own account of the attack, Chase would neglect to mention that he had the chance to lance the whale, an omission Nickerson made sure to correct in his narrative. But the more Chase thought about it, the more he realized that no one could have expected a whale to attack a ship, and not just once, but twice. Instead of acting as a whale was supposed to, as a creature never before suspected of premeditated violence and proverbial for its inoffensiveness, this big bull had been possessed by what Chase finally took to be a very human concern for the other whales. "He came directly from the shoal which we had just before entered," the first mate wrote, "and in which we had struck 3 of his companions, as if fired with revenge for their sufferings." As they bobbed in the lee of the wreck, the men of the Essex were of no mind to debate the whale's motives. Their overwhelming question was how 20 men in 3 boats could get out of a plight like this alive.